Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle, and this week I'm joined by a guest that I've been wanting to interview for quite some time. Sonia Thoms is the executive director of the Wheeling Symphony. This is her second season there, after 15 years between the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra and the Nashville Symphony. Sonia stepped away from those prestigious organizations to be the top executive, the helmswoman, if you will, of a regional orchestra. Talking with her today, I recognize, and I hope you will too, Sonia is a born leader, and it was just time to begin leading. Sonia Thoms has created forums that champion young musicians. She created OrchestraCareers.com, where she mentors college musicians who are just getting into the market. She's worked with the American Orchestra League and participated and presented workshops about the impact of the youngest musicians on the future of American orchestras. Sonia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Paula.
Do you encourage students to become leaders? Maybe this means leading through teaching or meeting the community at concerts. What materials do you usually share?
Yeah, I've learned that leadership is a skill. I really do encourage students to use that to help solve problems, to create deeper relationship with their peers or their professors or their community. There's a lot of leadership study that I've been doing, whether it's through books or podcasts or articles. And so depending on the situation and the student, I would point them towards any number of these resources that I've found helpful. But I think leadership is how we get things done. It's how we affect change. But a very important component of leadership is also curiosity and listening. That's something I've definitely tried to embrace these last few years. In my role at orchestra management, students have that capacity right now, even if they're in school, to practice those skills, which I think is really exciting for them because they don't have to wait till after graduation to start building their leadership capacity.
Right. You were a participant in the Emerging Leaders Program. Let's talk about that and how that shaped your career.
I went to that program of the league. This is a 10-month kind of national cohort. This was pre-pandemic, but we were on Zoom, this thing called Zoom back then. And I thought I was going into that to learn how to be an executive director. But that wasn't what that program actually turned out to be about. It was about self-leadership. And we spent a lot of time thinking about who we were as leaders, what our tendencies were, what our personality and like kind of leadership styles were like. It was kind of a rough start to think about who I was as a leader, you know, and I didn't ever take much time to be that introspective and reflective on my own abilities. So it was a little bit hard in the beginning, but it definitely changed my life once I kind of embraced the opportunities there were when I could really reflect on who I was as a leader and who I wanted to be.
Right. That seems to be what you're encouraging most of your mentees to do. You talked about a conference where you met 40 students in 2021. Was that after the ELP?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my time in the Emerging Leaders Program, there was a very pivotal moment where they asked a big question. They said, what's going to be your contribution to the industry? And I thought about it, but my answer became, I want to prepare students better for being in this industry. And it started me on a journey of trying to figure out how exactly to do that. And fast forwarding to what you're talking about in 2021, I had an opportunity to meet Simon Woods, the new president and CEO of the league, and tell him about the impact the Emerging Leaders Program had on me. And he said, well, what can we do? How can we serve students better? I said, invite them to conference. And 2021 happened to be a virtual conference because we were still all in that kind of pandemic era. But we, for the first time, were inviting students to the National Conference of the League of American Orchestras and starting conversations with them at a national level. And now it's grown into in-person content. And in fact, the league is starting their second version of the cohort, their Student Leadership Council, which is kind of a real formalization of student voices at the national level of the league.
Is the league starting to shift their vision?
They have undergone a new strategic plan, and one of the pillars is youth development, which I think is really exciting because you and I are in this industry now, but it's not going to be ours forever. So they have really taken a serious look at how the league is positioned and what they can do to help serve our next generation of leaders, whether they're musicians or aspiring managers. And so it is now a pillar of the strategic plan, and they're pouring resources and time and energy, not only into providing like programming for those students, but also centering their voices in conversations. Some of the students last June in Houston at the conference were asked to participate in some main stage conference sessions. I think that's really exciting. It's definitely shaking things up a little bit, right? To bring in our younger voices.
In 2023, I think it was, when the league was here in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Is that right? You and Lindsay Nova hosted a workshop. Tell us a little bit about that session.
Yeah, well, Lindsay and I are longtime classmates back from Eastman, and she is the executive director of TRIPO, Three Rivers Young People's Orchestra. We both spend a lot of time thinking about youth, and so we crafted a survey asking youth about their involvement with their professional orchestra that is near them. Are you going? Why aren't you going? How often are you going? What would make it easier for you to be able to go? So just trying to get the temperature of where our youngest generation is at with respect to their orchestras now. And we learned a lot about what the barriers are, but they really are as passionate about the art as, you know, probably you or I were at those ages. And so it's, how do we bridge that gap for them? How do we include them now so that they are part of the industry now and will, I believe that it will strengthen our industry moving forward.
Oh, absolutely. So your session at the League Conference in 2023 was about reporting on those surveys, and it probably caused them to reassess how they're going to deal with their youth.
Yeah, we reported out on our findings. We had about 500 respondents to the survey of over high school, middle school, high school, and college students. And so it was really cool. And that room was packed. It actually was standing room only. So I think that that was an unanticipated aspect of that session. I think there's a lot of people very curious about what our young people think, which is what I was hoping for, but not what I anticipated.
You sort of have your finger on the pulse of the future there. You know, congratulations. So, Sonia, would you say that your move to this regional organization from the world-class Pittsburgh Symphony and the nationally recognized Nashville Symphony brings a perspective that helps you see long-term goals?
I used to say all I know I learned from the Pittsburgh Symphony, and I learned so much on the job there. And I was there for 9 years, and then I went to Nashville and was there for 8 years. And what it really taught me is, yeah, how do you plan these massive seasons with, you know, 60 programs, 150 concerts, 40 weeks of concerts. And it really forces you to have really good systems to just achieve all of that, high standards that you can continue to meet time and time again. We were always planning seasons ahead. So what it really taught me was how to be strategic and tactical at any given moment. I think that that really was something I carried here, where the pace of concertizing is very different. We do one concert a month. The value of that and how to get those concerts off the ground and meaningful strategy work at all levels of the industry.
I think I heard you talk about systems and strategies in a podcast with John Devlin. And one thing you emphasized, you guys never leave a meeting without being on the same page.
There's a healthy grappling that can happen, you know, in an organization when you want alignment, but also if you're allowing your ideas to be shaped by another person's, like in my case, our music director. I think both of us come in with certain ideas and then we come out with a better idea if we allow it to happen that way. In an arts organization that's nonprofit, you have such scarce resources to work with that if you're pointing in the same direction, I feel like it's much more efficient and powerful.
You also talked about a book that you liked, Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, or How Great Leaders Inspire Everyone to Take Action. Do you look at every individual and assess their commitment to the organization? Does this happen over a time, or is this like a question in the forefront?
I actually take it more accountability to myself because I sit at a different position. I can see the horizon. I might be making decisions strategically that trickle down and require my staff or a musician to do something in their realm. But if I don't explain kind of the strategy and where we're going and why it's important that they contribute in a certain way, if there comes a point where the motivational fit to where the direction the organization is going, that the employee or musician doesn't align with where the organization is going, they might naturally self-select out and go somewhere else. I think it manifests in different ways. The longevity of someone in an organization really stems from that shared mission. I think that's true for me too.
So coming to Wheeling Symphony, it's an interesting course change, but you said in one interview that it was the pandemic that inspired you to seek this executive directorship when you saw that the Wheeling Symphony was performing while the Nashville Symphony was shut down. Did this tell you that smaller organizations can accomplish things that larger institutions couldn't due to their size?
It definitely piqued my curiosity as to what's maybe different about a per-service orchestra in a community like this. I had spent my 18 years before coming here at Group One, largest orchestras in the nation, you know, with 70 staff members, 80, 90 plus musicians, all full-time, everyone's salaried, and there's amazing things you can accomplish with organizations like that. The highest, you know, like going to Europe on tour with the Pittsburgh Symphony was a thrill I never realized in music school was going to be possible for me. What I was really also craving at that point in my career, my nature of my job in concert production on a staff of 70 with concerts that are, you know, 150 performances a year, I was feeling very disconnected from the community because I was churning out concerts after concerts after concerts. And I think just me personally, I was really missing the connection to the community. And I also theorized that an organization like the Wheeling Symphony, where there's one concert a month, how far could we really push the engagement with the community in an environment like that? So I think there is an agility to an organization like ours that's, now that I've been here a year, I can try things out. I can experiment a little bit. I think in a bigger organization, there are much more well-established programs and systems. And so sometimes that experimentation factor is a little bit lost, at least from my experience. So I was very curious when I saw the Wheeling Symphony still making music, I guess hungry for a change in environment.
Really?
And, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, you also have roots here in the area. Did you grow up mm-hmm. in Pittsburgh or did you go to Chicago?
I was born in Pittsburgh and all my extended family was always there growing up, but mostly grew up in Chicago, lived a little bit in Ohio and a little bit in California, but mostly in Chicago, which is where my dad was from.
Sometimes you have youth orchestra members join the orchestra on stage and you've created opportunities to promote these young musicians on social media platforms. You've given teachers recognition and you've encouraged the Wheeling Symphony Orchestra musicians to share their stories about their own education. How do you rank the importance of education in your mission at the Wheeling Symphony? Is it your plan to bring it to the forefront? And if so, what resources have you devoted to this plan?
Well, I'm sitting here today because of music teachers. So when I came here, I was really inspired by how strong these programs are. And then when I started to learn that there was kind of these legacy teachers who had been teaching in these roles for, you know, 20, 30 plus years, it was really interesting to see that and then not necessarily feel like there was a connection that the symphony had to that community other than through our youth orchestra. And I really wanted to strengthen that. Number one, making sure the Wheeling Symphony is embracing what is happening in our community already and celebrating that. We are not the only torchbearer of this art form in this area. And I also would say, coming into this role, as I had to think about when I was executive director of an orchestra, what would my vision be for an orchestra? What is its role in a city? I think one of the most important things we could do as an organization is inspire the community in lots of different ways, you know, to participate by coming to concerts, to maybe be inspired to participate through their giving. And because there was this rich music education culture over many, many, many years here, I bet there's a lot of people who still might be interested in playing their instrument. And so down the road, I'd love to create a community orchestra. Here in Wheeling, we're creating a community choir this season, actually, And I think the reason I think that's important is giving people opportunities to participate in the art states very clearly, this art form isn't just ours at a professional orchestral organization. This art form, we're part of it. Classical music, symphonic music, it belongs to everybody. It belongs to the community. And so if we really do believe that, giving people opportunities to participate in it, I think is more fulfilling.
Right. You can do that a lot of ways. You can come off the stage or connect to the stage, make the audience feel like they're part of the performance. You have your artist talking more to the audience, the conductor speaking to the audience, kind of brings them in, which is ultimately the way it's going to grow.
We're experimenting with opening our rehearsals in kind of measured ways, but we just had our youth orchestra string students come watch a rehearsal this last week. You know, and that's kind of one of the easiest ways that we can let them peek behind the curtain, right? And inspire our youngest musicians by just inviting them in. In February, the Masterworks program that we're doing here in Wheeling at the Capitol Theater will include a piece that has a side-by-side element. So we're going to be inviting some of our youth orchestra string musicians on the stage.
Yeah, who is the director of the youth orchestra?
So Ben Podolsky, longtime string teacher and musician here in the area, he retired. And so we have a young up-and-coming conductor who's actually a product of the Wheeling Symphony Youth Orchestra, Sean Hanscher. He's also currently a conducting fellow here at the Wheeling Symphony. And he is this year conducting both the Sinfonietta, which is kind of the beginner group, and Philharmonic, the more advanced group.
Let's get a picture of your own musical upbringing. Your family consists entirely of musicians. I believe everyone studied music formally, your brothers, your aunts included. Your father's a composer, your mother's a professional keyboardist. So it was almost a foregone conclusion that you would learn an instrument. But at some point, you went into orchestra management because you wanted to lead. Just tell us about the progression.
I was born into a family of musicians. I was handed the oboe at age 9 and said, "You will be an oboist." I had private lessons from day one, which was really, now I realize what a gift that was. By age 13, all I wanted to do was be in an orchestra someday. Really, I wanted to be the principal oboist of the Chicago Symphony. I went to music school with the intention to win an orchestra job. So I went to Eastman for my undergrad and Rice University for my graduate work. And by the time I got to grad school, now I'm taking auditions. Things are getting real, right? I'm going to have to find a job. But I was always that student throughout all those 6 years that if I wanted to perform a cool piece that happened to be an orchestra piece, I would book the recital hall. I would recruit my friends. I'd find the music. I might even conduct. I would MC the concert. Like, it just didn't occur to me not to do that. I really liked facilitating things like that. I think if I wanted to really win an orchestra job, I believe I could have done it, but I also was so interested in chamber music and teaching, and I wasn't sure that I would be able to do all those other things if I only focused on trying to win an orchestra job. But I also didn't know where that left me because I wasn't aware of all the options. Long story short, I found an internship in operations at the Kennedy Center. My parents live in Maryland, and I finished grad school and I didn't have a job and went to live with them. I thought that maybe I wanted to pursue education outreach. So I looked at the Kennedy Center and all the internships that said education or outreach in them. And the internship program said, "We think you'd be well suited for operations." And I said, "What is that?" I had no idea there were people working backstage at these orchestras I was trying to get into. And so I got this operations internship at the National Symphony at the Kennedy Center after grad school. Pretty awesome gig. And my eyes were wide open to the fact that there were as many people off stage trying to make this happen for the people on stage. That was really a huge turning point for me. My internship ended and I wanted to get to Pittsburgh to be with family. And it just so happened a part-time operations assistant position at the Pittsburgh Symphony was open. I got that job and I thought, great, here's my new desk job, management job. I'm going to start my oboe studio, start freelancing, and I'm making it. I'm doing it. I'm an adult. And about 2 months in, they offered me full time because someone left the department. It was kind of a rough transition because there was a lot of demands and a lot of skills that I needed to learn on the job. Here I am almost 20 years later and really glad that I took the leap.
So you had your background in performance. You said it helps because you know how performers think. Can you talk about that?
I think that number one, on a tactical level, it really helped me understand how to support my first role, which was the logistics of the stage, building stage plots, thinking about the show flow, like, okay, we're going to tune and then we're going to play the overture and then the conductor leaves the stage, knowing how a concert runs from start to finish and what the musicians might need on stage served me very, very well in the beginning. But also just the reverence for what the musicians were undertaking. You know, as an oboist, if I saw Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony on the plan for next week, I knew that that was a stressful situation for the principal oboist to have to prepare for. And thankfully, I was trained in my internship. Operations takes care of all the details, so the musicians only need to think about playing their instruments.
So what kind of details would that be? Do you give them a little bit more room?
Yeah, the spacing on stage, also making sure that, you know, even just down to schedule information that the musicians had everything they needed to know about what was going to happen in the concert, if tuning was going to be before a speech or after a speech, trying to think through what it was going to feel like to be on stage once they're in their seat. Hey, do you need anything? Sometimes there might be a sightline issue and someone needs to move over half a foot to the right so that the oboist or the clarinetist can see the conductor. We also have stagehands, so I would primarily be working with those stagehands who are the actual ones that set up the stage. But yeah, every detail down to, can you get another plexiglass shield for me because the instruments behind me are really loud, to there's a draft or it's too cold or it's too windy.
So it really helps that you know how it is to be a performer when you're thinking about the needs. Because, you know, they really are doing the hardest job of all. Let's talk about orchestracareers.com. It's a place where you give advice and real-time activities for music students. So how did you come up with this idea?
I didn't know my job existed till after grad school, and I was in music school. And so part of what I do with Orchestra Careers is just trying to build awareness about all the careers available. I know, and I've met many students like myself who maybe stepped onto that performance path, but then was curious about other parts of it. And so I try to be an information desk, kind of an opportunity for students to come ask questions. I also have tons of colleagues in the industry who do marketing or fundraising or education work. The sooner I can get those students who are curious about how to do social media for an orchestra connected to someone who does that, I think the better. That helps them on their path and helps us in the industry get them equipped to join us. And so that's kind of the genesis of Orchestra Careers. In the pandemic, when we all pushed virtual, I started doing online free events where I would start bringing panels of my colleagues just to talk about what they do. And I also just help them with their job searches or their internship searches, you know, creating a resume is something that I think all musicians do, you know, obviously if you're applying for an audition.
I was watching a webinar titled How Auditions Help You Create Great Cover Letters. It was really fantastic because you have a crossover between a live audition, a taped audition actually, and a cover letter, and what it feels like to be on either side of the screen.
A resume is pretty straightforward. But those cover letters are the taped round, right, for an administrative job. And it is hard to write a cover letter and also to do in-person interviews, right? But my experience now as a hiring manager for the last several years really shaped some of my opinions about what I think people could do well and what they don't have to worry about. And so I use that knowledge as a hiring manager to help coach students and recent grads through the job search process. Really, throughout all of this, I've realized my skills as a musician that I've learned still guide me today, even without my oboe in my hands. Because the thing is, students will come to me and they might be a junior in undergrad and say, I don't think I want to do performance. Do I have to start over? I'll say, no. Let's talk about how you preparing for a recital is really you doing project management, or you leading your chamber music ensemble is preparing you to be a manager or a leader. They are very well equipped to step into these roles if they want to.
Well, let's hope so. I think that you also take it a step further because you're encouraging your mentees to learn some more self-awareness, which is something that every young musician can learn about themselves as well.
Some of the questions I like to ask students are, what are the problems your friends come to you to help them solve? You know, I think sometimes when we're looking for ways that we can promote our career or grow our career, especially younger, they think they need to do what other people think they need to do. But if you really lean and recognize into your unique capabilities, the way your experiences have shaped you, you've got a lot to offer. Even if I can just help a student realize that they're great at facilitating disconnect or a conflict, you know, they're the ones that are coming in and helping to smooth things over, or this person is always the one that is helping others get organized, or if they have a challenge in an assignment, they're able to coach them through, you know. Sometimes they're shocked at the things that they are actually really good at. And if you just kind of help them realize that, it might actually push them in a new direction with confidence that they didn't know that they had.
Right. There are certain people that you call when you're getting ready for an audition. Can you hear me play? Mm-hmm. You know, and they might not think that they're that person, but other people think that they are. People deciding, you know, how they are relevant to the mission of the organization.
And that can be a tough thing for especially students to think big picture. How will they contribute to a bigger mission? But another question I like to ask students is like, what impact do you want to have with your career? And that really gets, I get an answer every time. You'd think it would stump them, but a lot of times they do want to make a big impact. And if you can articulate that and you are authentic and genuine about your answer, I, as a hiring manager, want to hear that. I made the mistake as a young professional of trying to cast a wide net and be all things to all people, right? And then it kind of waters down the version that I am. But when I started to lean into my strengths and my individuality, you become more distinct in a way. And I think that that's really valuable.
So what's on the horizon? Is there a multi-step plan? Or what's your dream for community and education in your role at the Wheeling Symphony?
I do have big dreams. You know, I think I mentioned before, I've never seen a professional orchestra have a community orchestra under its umbrella. I think that would be so amazing down the road to be able to be in a place where we're providing that participation opportunity. And maybe the WSO musicians are help doing sectionals for the adult community orchestra. Like imagine the kind of the community and network building that could happen in a environment like that. But on the path towards that as well, you know, how can we here in this region support our youngest musicians with more resources here? There are so many fantastic opportunities up in Pittsburgh, you know, for our young musicians with Paiso and Tripo and everything in between. How can we also create more opportunities, rich opportunities right here? I think that starts with strengthening our relationships with the teachers and then recruiting and building our youth orchestra, giving them opportunities to feel included and incorporated into the bigger picture of what we're doing at the symphony. All this on the path to becoming more meaningful to our community. Gone are the days of our orchestras being able to say, you should love Beethoven. You should come and see us at the theater and expect that everyone's just going to come running. We have to do the hard work of getting out into the community, building relationship, and inviting them back to what I like to say is kind of our main stage offerings here at the Capitol Theater in Wheeling. But I think we have to do the hard work and the rewarding work of building those relationships first around kind of this shared passion for a life with music.
Well, I wish you all the best. It sounds like you have some great ideas, Sonia. And thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
If you want to hear the Wheeling Symphony perform, it performs at the historic Capitol Music Hall in downtown Wheeling, West Virginia. It's a really short drive from Pittsburgh, and their orchestra features many of the finest musicians you know from the cultural district in Pittsburgh. There's links in the show notes for the Wheeling Symphony and Sonia's website called orchestracareers.com. If you like this episode, please share it with someone you think would enjoy it. You can subscribe to Accelerando at Apple Podcasts and elsewhere. If you want to ask Sonia a question, Orchestra Careers is also on Facebook. You can search Orchestra Careers on YouTube as well. As always, thanks for supporting live music and the musicians that make their living playing music. Have a great week. Hopefully it will include a concert. Bye now.